was soda. Then I remembered a game me and Roderick used to play that was actually fun. We pretended the floor was lava and we had to stay off it by using cushions from the couch. Jump, jump. Ha ha ha. Spring, boing, jump. Me and Roderick used to play that game for hours. I figured if I got Manny started, he could keep himself entertained while I wrapped up my chores. But when I told Manny how the game worked, he totally freaked out. I said, okay, the floor is lava. So now, Manny wouldn't go anywhere near the floor. And that made things really inconvenient for me. He was hanging onto my head. But I still had to do my chores, or I'd be in trouble when Mom and Dad got home. And I had a big one in front of me, which was clearing the driveway. I knew Manny would have a total meltdown if I left him inside with all that lava, so I got him dressed in his snow gear, which wasn't easy. I figured Manny could play on the back decking while I shoveled the driveway, and he'd be safe because the decking is closed in. So I plopped him out there. Plop. Ooh. The snow on the driveway was wet and heavy, and it was hard to make any progress. After a half hour, I decided to take a break and soak my hands in some warm water. While I was inside, I figured I'd check and see how Manny was doing out on the back decking. But Manny was gone. He had built a little staircase out of snow to escape. Thankfully, he didn't get far, but I realized I couldn't leave him alone anymore. I took Manny to the front yard with me. It was getting late, and Dad gets really mad when the driveway's not cleared when he comes home from work. So, I shoveled as fast as I could, and Manny pitched in to help. But there was just too much snow and not enough time. I was ready to give up when some girls from a different neighborhood walked by and offered to clear our driveway for $10. These kids looked young, and I didn't see how they could do any better than me and Manny, but we could use all the help we could get, so I was willing to give them a chance. I had $5 in the drawer next to my bed, and I got the other $5 from the big jar of change Manny has in his room. But what I didn't realize when I agreed to the deal with those girls was that they had a snowblower. So, they were done clearing the whole driveway within 5 minutes. I felt like I was getting ripped off, so I told them I'd pay them $3 instead of $10. But I guess this wasn't the first time someone had tried to stiff them on payment. They moved all the snow back onto the driveway and added the snow from the front lawn just to make a point. Ah! By the time my parents got home, things were worse than when I started. After dinner, Mom and Dad lectured me until about 8 o'clock for not finishing my chores. And that's when Roderick got out of bed to start his day. Saturday. I usually sleep in at weekends, but this morning Mom had other plans for me. She said I was going to spend the whole day outside. I told her I'd go out in the snow after I'd played some video games, but she reminded me about screen-free weekends, and I knew she wasn't gonna budge. When I was younger, I could spend hours playing in the snow, but nowadays, after about 10 minutes, I'm ready to come inside. Grown-ups act like being in the snow is the most fun you can ever have, but you never see them out there rolling around in it. I can only remember one time Dad played with us out in the snow, but that ended the second Roderick dumped snow down the back of Dad's neck. Mom's always making us kids go outside because she says we need our vitamin D, which you get from the sun. I tell Mom I get plenty of vitamin D from the sun in my video games, but that kind of reasoning never works on her. When I went outside today, Manny was already in the front yard making snowmen, or whatever you'd call those things. They were kind of lumps with sticks sticking out. We never finished raking the lawn in the autumn, so Manny used the leaves we hadn't picked up to decorate his snow friends. They had beards and hair and hats. Manny had used up most of the snow in the yard, so there wasn't a whole lot I could even do outside. I decided to head up to Rowley's, which meant I had to pass by Fregley's house. And sure enough, he was out in his front yard. He was actually inside a snowman, with his head sticking out, saying, "Wanna finish building me?" The reason I went to Rowley's was because his family just got heated floors, so on cold days, I try to spend as much time at his house as possible. Lying on the floor. But Mom must have known I was going to go to Rowley's, because she called his parents and he was outside when I got there. As long as we both had to be outdoors, I figured we should make the most of it. Since I'd already done all the hard work getting up the hill, I told Rowley we should get in a little sledging. The plow usually comes through by late morning, so we can only get in a few good runs before the street is cleared. But the regular plow guy was on holiday, and the kids at the top of the hill told the substitute driver that Surrey Street was 2 miles down the road. They had covered the Surrey Street sign in snow, so that bought us some extra time. I don't actually think it's a good idea to mess around with substitutes because it always comes back to bite you. Last year, we had a long-term substitute teacher in algebra. And on his first day, me and my classmates all switched seats with each other because we knew the sub would be relying on the seating chart. So he said,
"Robert, did you finish your homework?"
And some guy who wasn't Robert said,
"Yep."
And some other guy said, And Robert sat there grinning. I've got to say, it was pretty hilarious having him call us by the wrong names every day. But when the kid pretending to be me started acting like a total jerk, it wasn't so funny anymore. 'Cause he was standing on the teacher's table, just being a jerk, and the teacher said,
"Greg Hifley, you come down right this instant."
And when our real teacher got back, the sub gave her a write-up on the fake Greg Hifley, which landed me in detention for 2 weeks. Anyway, Rowley only has one sledge, but there's just enough room on it for two people. We squeezed a board and pointed it down the hill, but with all that weight, we couldn't really get any momentum. When we got close to the bottom of the hill, we came to a dead stop. But that was probably a good thing, because the kids who made it all the way down got nailed by the lower Surrey Street kids' snowballs when they crossed into their territory. Ooh, ow! Oof. Things could have got a lot uglier, but then the substitute snowplow driver worked out where Surrey Street was, and that was the end of that. As the snowplow rumbled down Surrey Street, clearing it of snow. By then, I figured we had been outside long enough, and we tried to go inside, but Mom had locked the door, and I could tell she wasn't messing around. When we knocked on the door, Mom opened up the curtain to see who was there. And when she saw it was me and Rowley, she just stood there sipping her hot cocoa. And then closed the curtain on us. Since we couldn't sledge anymore, we needed to find something else to do. So me and Rowley went to the empty lot a few doors up from my house to decide what to do next. I figured that as long as we had to be outside, we might as well stay warm. At school, we watched a movie about people in the Arctic who built igloos to survive in the cold weather, and I thought maybe we could give it a try. We made some snow bricks and stacked them the way people in the movie did. It was hard at first, but then we started getting the hang of it. The main thing was getting the shape of the dome just right so it didn't collapse. We were really careful and everything held together. But when we put in the last brick at the top, we realized we forgot to build a door. Rowley started hyperventilating, and I knew if I didn't do something, he was gonna suck up all the oxygen in there. So I busted through the top and took a big gulp of fresh air. Some neighborhood kids had been watching us build our igloo, and with my head sticking up, I must have looked like an easy target, because they unloaded on us. Ow! Ooh. After those idiots ran out of snowballs, they climbed on top of the igloo. But it wasn't meant to support any weight, and within a few seconds, the whole thing came crashing down. Ow! Ooh. Ooh. Ow! Me and Rowley were lucky to crawl out of there alive. Once we pulled ourselves out of our ruined igloo, I decided that we'd had enough fun for one day. So we went back to the house, and this time, Mom let us in. I told Mom what happened at the empty lot and how she needed to go out there and yell at those stupid kids for us. But Mom said that learning to deal with conflict is part of growing up, and that me and Rowley were going to have to deal with this on our own. I didn't like the sound of that. I thought the whole point of having parents is that you've got someone to solve your problems for you. Dad was listening from the other room, and he had a totally different take. He said that the neighborhood kids had just declared war on me and Rowley, and if we didn't fight back, they'd think it was okay to attack us whenever they wanted. Dad said that when he was growing up, his neighborhood turned into a battlefield every time it snowed. Kids built giant snow forts and had epic snowball fights, and everyone was part of a different clan. Dad said each clan had its own flag, and when you captured somebody else's fort, you planted a flag to mark your territory. Well, Rowley thought we should form a clan, and he really liked this flag idea. I thought it seemed kind of dumb, but as long as making a flag gave us an excuse to be indoors for a while, I was all for it. We found an old pillowcase in the laundry room and got some markers out of the junk drawer in the kitchen. We started by trying to come up with a name for our clan. Rowley said he wanted us to be Hufflepuff. But I said if we were going to do this, I wanted our name to be something original. We argued back and forth for a while about our name, and I realized we weren't going to agree on one. So we talked about how our flag should look. Rowley wanted our symbol to be a wolf. But I wanted something even fiercer than that, so we'd scare kids off. I thought a bloody battle axe would do the trick, but of course Rowley didn't like that idea. So we compromised and put the two things together. But when you add an axe and a wolf, you just get a dead wolf with an axe in its head, which isn't going to scare anyone. We were going to start over and make a new flag, but when I got another pillowcase, Mom told us we needed to go back outside, so we put on our snow gear and went to the empty lot. The kids who wrecked our igloo had moved on to other things, so me and Rowley had the empty lot all to ourselves. We used the snow from the igloo as a starting point and made a fort that could hold up to an attack. After we were finished, we planted our flag on top of the wall and waited. I figured our fort might attract some attention, but I didn't realize just how much. Within a few minutes, we had kids coming at us from every direction. Ow! We were completely outgunned, and when the kids rushed our fort, we had to abandon it. When we got back to the house, we told Dad what happened, but after we described our fort to him, he said we'd done everything all wrong. He said we needed to build our fort on high ground so we could drive back our enemies. Then, Dad launched into a big history lesson on castle warfare and all the things that people did to defend themselves back in medieval times. The stuff they did in the old days was totally brutal. And here's just one example. When invaders tried to climb the walls of a castle, the people inside would pour boiling oil on them. I hope it doesn't get to that level in our neighborhood battles. But tonight, I added an item to Mom's grocery list just in case it does. Shopping list. Eggs. Milk, ketchup, bread, pickles, peas, pears, batteries, oil. Sunday. It must have snowed another 7 inches last night, and the street was totally covered when I woke up. I couldn't even see the line between our yard and the road. I was kind of surprised the plow hadn't come yet, because when there's this much snow, people can't even get their cars out of their driveways. But when Dad came back from his morning walk, I found out what was going on. Dad said that when the plow tried to get up the hill, it had got stuck. And when the snow plow driver was ambushed by the neighborhood kids, he ran off and left the truck sitting in the street. That meant we could sledge all day if we wanted to. But sledging is for kids, and I had other plans in mind. I'd been up all night looking through Dad's books to learn everything I could about castle warfare and battle strategies, and by the morning, I was ready. I wanted to get started making a fort with Rowley straight away, but I knew that the second we put up walls, we were going to be under attack. The only way we could fight back was if we had ammunition. I figured we could buy a big supply of pre-made snowballs from Mitchell Pickett, so we went down to his shed, which was open for business. But I guess things must have gone well for Mitchell last winter, because this year he expanded his operations. As well as snowballs, he had snowball molds, icicles, snowball launchers, and something else called sloppy specials. I'd borrowed enough money from Manny's change jar to pay for 3 dozen snowballs, but now that I saw all this other stuff, I had to make some tough choices. The sloppy specials looked like regular snowballs to me, so I asked Mitchell why they were 5 times more expensive. He said that each one was a regular snowball with slush inside, and don't even ask me how he pulled that off. We ended up buying 2 dozen pre-made snowballs and 1 snowball launcher, which I figured we could use if we needed to nail somebody from long distance. But I wish I'd brought the whole jar of change, because Mitchell was selling a snow catapult that looked like it could really do some damage. I'd have to get that another time, though. We loaded up my sledge with our purchases and went back to the empty lot. But when we got closer, we were shocked by what we saw. There were a bunch of snow forts in the lot now, and there were kids inside each one. These kids had copied our idea right down to the flags. The Marley sisters had a spear on their flag, and Evelyn Trimble had a bat on hers. The Garza twins had a two-headed ogre, which actually looked pretty cool. There were some really lame flags, too. Marcus Marconi's dad owned the sandwich shop in the center of town that had gone out of business, and Marcus used the flag that used to hang in front of the shop. It said, "Open." I wanted to get closer to see who else had made a fort, but when we got near the lot, Ernesto, Gabriel, and a bunch of other kids opened fire on us.
Snowball attack!
Ow! The lot was totally overcrowded, and I knew there was no way we could build a snow fort there. So our only chance was to take over someone else's. I got some old binoculars from my garage so we could scope things out without having to get too close. Things had got a lot crazier in the 5 minutes we were gone, though. Gabriel and Ernesto were in a battle with the Marley sisters, and a bunch of homeschooled kids were going at it with the Garza twins. Amelia Greenwald and Evelyn Trimble had teamed up to fight Anthony Denard and Sheldon Reyes, and Speed Bump and Latricia Hooks were actually going at it with their fists.
Huh?
Ow. But I wasn't focused on all that. I was searching for a fort that looked vulnerable, and I found one. The Duplex kids had built a pretty solid-looking fort, but as usual, it looked like they weren't getting along. They were just fighting. I figured they'd wear themselves out fighting, and when they did, me and Rowley could pounce. So we moved in a little closer and waited for the right moment. That's when I noticed a fort that didn't have anyone in it. The fort was sitting all alone on top of a big mound of snow. I remembered what Dad said about the high ground, and this fort was in the perfect spot. I couldn't figure out why someone would build a fort and abandon it, but I knew this was our big chance, so we snuck around it and climbed over the back wall. It turned out the fort wasn't empty, though. It belonged to Baby Gibson, who was inside with a stockpile of snowballs. I should have noticed his flag had a baby's dummy on it. But the second we stepped into the fort, it was under attack.
Snowball attack!
The homeschooled kids must have known about the high ground thing, too, and now they wanted the fort for themselves. But when they came charging up the mound, we drove them back, and even Baby Gibson got in the act. Then kids started coming for us from every direction, and it was getting harder and harder to defend the fort. The Duplex kids split into two groups, and they came at us from the left and the right, while Ernesto and Gabriel started using snowball throwers to target us from their fort. And while we were trying to deal with all that, some little kid from Mrs. Jimenez's playgroup tunneled up through the bottom of our fort and totally took us off guard. The next thing we knew, our fort was totally infested with preschoolers. And to cap it all, the Marley sisters did a sneak attack from the rear, which was terrifying because those girls go for the eyes. Me and Rowley got driven out of the fort and onto the open battlefield, where it was just total mayhem. Everyone was fighting everyone else, and any sense of order was just gone. Throw, hit, grr, Then something happened that made everyone stop. Joe O'Rourke got hit in the mouth with an ice ball and lost a couple of teeth. In our neighborhood, ice balls are on the banned list in snowball fights. So when somebody crossed that line, everybody knew things had gone too far. Representatives from all the clans had a meeting in the center of the empty lot to settle on the rules. Everyone agreed that ice balls were off limits, and so was yellow snow. We came up with a bunch of other rules, too, like how it's not okay to stuff snow in someone's hat and then put it back on their head. Once we agreed on everything, we were ready for the next round of battle. But while we were doing all that talking, we didn't notice what was happening right behind us. The Lower Surrey Street kids had snuck up to the top of the hill with their sledges, and by then there was nothing we could do to stop them as they came screaming down the hill on their sledges. Now, if there's one thing that unites us hill kids, it's when the kids from the bottom of the hill try to take what's ours. We don't have much, but we have the hill, and no one's going to take that from us. As long as the plow was stuck, we knew those guys were just going to keep coming. So we decided to do something about it. The only way to keep the Lower Surrey Street kids from coming back up the hill was to build a wall to block their path. And we didn't want to build some puny wall they could just push over either. We wanted something that was solid. But we needed to make it fast because those guys were already marching back up the hill with their sledges. So, we got some small recycling boxes from some nearby houses, used them as molds, and started building. We made it a double wall, so if anyone broke through the first layer, they'd still have to deal with the second one, and we stockpiled a ton of snowballs. We weren't going to be able to get boiling oil, so I sent Rowley up to his house to fill some thermoses with hot chocolate. The homeschooled kids went out and collected icicles to stick into the wall, and the duplex kids threw together some snowmen to make it seem like there were more of us than there actually were. And when the Lower Surrey Street kids came back, we were ready for them. When those guys saw our wall, they didn't know what to do. And when they got closer, we hit them with everything we had. Ow. Those guys didn't stand a chance. We sent them running back down the hill, and we celebrated our victory. But we celebrated too soon. 10 minutes later, the Lower Surrey Street kids were back. And this time, they were armed to the teeth. They were wearing football helmets and hockey gear and all sorts of stuff. Most of them were wearing sports gear to protect themselves from our snowballs. And the moment I knew this wasn't going to be an easy fight was when one of them threw a hockey stick. It went right through the head of one of our snowmen. But still, we were the ones with the wall, and we had the higher ground. So we unleashed another round of snowballs. We held them off for a while, but those guys had some surprises up their sleeves. They hit us with a round of sloppy specials, which we were totally unprepared for. Incoming! Ow! If the Lower Surrey Street kids had sloppy specials, that meant Mitchell Pickett was playing both sides. But we'd have to deal with him later, because now we had a new problem. It turned out the sloppy specials were just a distraction to draw our attention away from the next wave of attack, which was coming at us fast. They had ladders. Run, run, step, step, tromp, tromp. We hit the kids carrying ladders with snowballs, but before we knew it, they'd planted their ladders at the base of the wall and had started climbing their way up it. But Rowley came back with the hot chocolate just in the nick of time. We emptied the thermoses out on the kids scaling the wall. Unfortunately, Rowley hadn't added any water to the hot chocolate mix. So all we really did was annoy them by sprinkling chocolate powder in their faces. I thought those guys were about to take control of the wall, but then Latricia Hooks and Speed Bump saved the day by dumping trash cans full of slush on them. We didn't have a second to celebrate, though, because the Lower Surrey Street kids were already launching their next attack. Half the fifth grade football team lives at the bottom of the hill, and they tried to take down the wall with brute force. They ran at it with their football helmets on. But the wall held up, and those guys wore themselves out with the effort. By now, everyone was tired. The sun was out, and it was actually starting to get warm. I really wished I hadn't worn my thermal underwear because I was roasting with those extra layers. The Lower Surrey Street kids kept coming at us, and we kept driving them back. And after a while, nobody had the energy to keep fighting. Finally, the other team turned round and went back home. At first, we thought that meant we had won, but those guys weren't giving up. They were just refueling. By now, it was lunchtime, and the kids at the bottom of the hill came back outside with sandwiches and snacks. And when some kids started handing out juice cartons, it was a little hard to watch. We were all pretty thirsty on the wall, and it was only getting hotter. Some kids started sucking on snowballs to stay hydrated. And they got through half our stockpile before the rest of us realized what was happening. We took an inventory of what we had left, and we knew we didn't have enough to fight off a major assault. So we split our remaining snowballs into thirds and put Anthony Denard in charge of protecting them. We kept waiting for the next attack from the Lower Surrey Street kids, but it never came. After a while, we realized their strategy was to wait us out until we cracked and then take our wall without a fight. Purvis Gentry was the first one on our side to break. He hadn't even had breakfast this morning, so the sight of all those sandwich crusts lying on the ground made him crazy. He climbed over the wall and ran down the hill, and that was the last any of us saw of him. He disappeared in a cloud of snowballs. But the rest of us hill kids kept it together. 3 hours went by, but the Lower Surrey Street kids weren't budging. In fact, they looked like they were settling in for the night. A few of them had strung extension cords to their houses, so now they had electricity, and we could see the glow of their TV sets from where we were. Things were going from bad to worse on the wall. A lot of the younger kids were tired and hungry and wanted to go home, and I couldn't blame them because by now it was dinner time. Jacob Hoff said he was supposed to have a clarinet lesson at 6 o'clock, and if he missed it, his parents would be mad, and the rest of us could understand that kind of thing. Jacob's house was just a few doors down, and we told him if he made a run for it, we'd give him cover. He promised that the second his clarinet lesson was over, he'd come back to the wall with his coat pockets stuffed with granola bars and fruit chews. That got everybody pretty excited, and we helped Jacob over the wall. Sure enough, as soon as he touched down on the other side, the lower Surrey Street kids opened fire on him, but we fired back and got Jacob to his front door safely. It turned out it was a wasted effort, though. The thing about the clarinet lesson was just an excuse to go home, and when we saw Jacob at his bedroom window, we knew he was never coming back with those snacks. After that, the mood inside the wall was really grim. Some kids were crying, and I didn't see how we could hold out much longer. The lower Surrey Street kids must have known they had us on the ropes, because that's when they launched paper airplanes into our fort with notes written on them. They said, "Surrender now, and you can leave unharmed." That was too much for some kids to take. Even Baby Gibson seemed shaken, so I guess now we know he can read. A few minutes later, a kid came running towards us from between a couple of houses to the right of our fort, and we got ready to pelt him with a round of snowballs. But somebody recognized the kid, and we held our fire. It was Trevor Nix, who used to live on the hill. Trevor was out of breath and could barely get his words out, so we pulled him up over the wall and waited for him to calm down. After Trevor got himself together, he told us what was going on. He said the lower Surrey Street kids had been holding him captive, but he managed to escape. Trevor said those guys were planning something really bad, and he wanted to tell us before it was too late. He said the lower Surrey Street kids were creating a huge stockpile of snowballs, and when it got dark, they were going to launch a full-scale attack. But that wasn't even the worst part. Those guys were making their snowballs in the Guzman's yard, and that's the place with all the dogs. So that meant they were using yellow snow, and who knows what else. Everyone was pretty mad about what the lower Surrey Street kids were planning, but we were glad Trevor had given us a heads up. We told him that from now on he could sledge on our hill any time. We agreed we couldn't just sit there and wait for the attack, so we started working on a plan. Half of us would sneak down the hill and launch a surprise attack on the kids making snowballs in the Guzman's yard. The other half would stay back to protect the fort. We sketched the plan in the snow with a stick to make sure we were all on the same page. Me and Rowley wanted to be part of the action, so we chose to be on the sneak attack team. Our group loaded up a few sledges with all the snowballs we had left, and we slipped over the back wall and between some houses. It was getting dark now, so we knew those guys wouldn't be able to see us coming. When we got to the Guzman's yard, we stopped to scope out the scene. Sure enough, there was a big group of kids making snowballs at the front by a rock wall. When Baby Gibson gave the signal, we launched our attack.
Snowball attack!
But the other guys didn't even flinch when we hit them. And as we got closer, we realized it was all just a trick. We were shocked. The Lower Surrey Street kids had created decoys to split us up, which meant we'd been double-crossed by Trevor Nix. We rushed back to the wall, but by then it was already too late. There was a counter snowball attack! The wall was in ruins, and we were out of ammo. It looked really bad for us hill kids, but then something happened that gave us hope. A group of kids was marching up the hill towards us, and when they got closer, I realized it was the safety patrols. For a brief second, I thought they were there to save us. All those girls coming in with their safety patrol whistles. But they weren't there to help anyone. They were there for revenge. Usually, the safety patrols aren't allowed to throw snowballs, but today was a Sunday, and that meant they were free to do whatever they wanted. Half the girls on the safety patrols are on the softball team, and anybody who says girls can't throw hard doesn't know what they're talking about. Ow! The battle turned into the Surrey Street kids versus the safety patrols, and we outnumbered them 2-1. But then half the girls on our street switched sides, and it got really confusing. In the middle of all this, another group came down from the top of the hill. It was the Whirly Street kids, who must have got kicked off the golf course and were coming to sledge on our street. And once they got into the mix, it was just a total free-for-all. It was the biggest snowball fight we had ever seen. Just when things couldn't get any crazier, a terrifying sound cut through the air, and everyone stopped to figure out what it was. The only ones on the street who knew for sure were me and Rowley. Then the Mingo kids started pouring out of the woods, looking like they'd just woken up from a 3-month nap, and one of them was blowing that Mingo horn. The last Mingo to emerge was Meckley. He was carrying something on top of a stick, and at first I couldn't tell what it was. But when he got closer, I realized it was Mr. Morsels. Meckley wasn't wearing his belt, which I thought was strange. But seeing that made me remember something, and I reached into my coat pocket and pulled out something cold and metal. It was Meckley's deer skull belt buckle. When me and Rowley were in the Mingo's camp, I must have put the belt buckle in my pocket without even realizing it. And now I was in a panic because that meant Meckley Mingo was coming for me. But the only thing kids in my town hate more than each other is the Mingos. So, when the Mingos charged, everyone turned to face them. Charge! Well, everyone except me. At that point, I'd had enough. When the Mingos came at us, I looked for a good place to hide. There was a big hole in a collapsed section of the wall, so I dived inside and Rowley was right behind me. The battle raged all around us, and I didn't see how we were going to get out of this one alive. Rowley didn't think we were going to make it either. He told me that if I survived but he didn't, I could have all of his video games. I patted myself down to see if I had a pen so he could put that in writing, but all I had on me was that stupid belt buckle. It didn't matter anyway, because 5 seconds later, the ground started shaking, and it felt like we were in an earthquake. I thought we were going to be buried alive, and all I could think of is how the two of us were going to end up in a museum after they dug us out in a couple of thousand years. The display would read, "Children, 21st Century," and there would be Rowley and me, frozen. But then the ground stopped shaking, and after a few seconds, we popped our heads out of our hiding spot to see what was happening. The snowplow was 3/4 of the way up the street, mowing through everything in its path. And I don't know if the snowplow driver couldn't see the kids in the road or just didn't care, because he drove straight up the road, plowing everything in front of him. By now, the snow was melting and everything was turning to slush. And once the plow had left our street, it was quiet. The crazy thing is, now that the street was plowed, there wasn't really anything left to fight over. So everyone picked themselves up and went back home. Even the Mingo kids went back to where they came from. But there were lots of us just laying around going, "Groan, moan." And the truth is, I couldn't really remember what we were all fighting over to begin with. Friday. We've been back at school for a week, and it's warmed up a lot in the past few days. I don't want to curse it or anything, but I think we might have seen the last of the cold weather. So I'm not really worried about our lost pig anymore. In fact, he's probably somewhere warm by now, having the time of his life. He's probably on a beach somewhere with a bunch of friends and a drink in his hand. There's still some snow on the ground in my neighborhood, so Mitchell Pickett's been enjoying the snowmobile he bought with all the money he made this winter. So anybody who says that war doesn't pay should think again. Especially when Mitchell Pickett roars by you and says, "Woo-hoo!" Mitchell's not the only one who did well, though. Trevor Nix has been playing hockey down at the bottom of the hill with the Lower Surrey Street kids every day after school. So, I guess that's what you get for being a traitor. But I'm not going to complain. I'm just glad I made it through the winter without getting myself killed. The thing I learned about myself is that I'm just not the hero type. Trust me, I'm glad there are people like that out there. But the world needs guys like me, too. Because if human beings are still around 500 million years from now, it's going to be thanks to the Greg Heffleys of the world who befriended the robots, thereby figuring out a way to survive. The end.
We hope you have enjoyed this Penguin audio production of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Meltdown by Jeff Kinney, read by Dan Russell. It was produced by Paul Dawson, and the post-production was by ID Audio. For more Penguin audio productions, visit us at penguin.co.uk/audio. Copyright and recording, Penguin Audio 2018. Text copyright, Wimpy Kid Inc. 2018. All rights reserved. The moral rights of the author have been asserted. Thanks for listening.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.